Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Welcome to the property planner, buyer and professor. It's my great pleasure to share an episode that has a lot of data and a lot of work done in the background. Pete and Dave, you've both been going through the data and spending hours on it. And that's because you were naughty in our last recording and you talked about the footy scores. This is what happens.
That was our extra homework.
That's quite see the correlation.
It's a bit like in the old days, the correlation between somebody being naughty and then they had to write on the blackboard 100 times, I must not be naughty.
Yeah. This was your 1,000 lashes, both of you, 1,000 lashes. Instead, you've done probably 1,000 minutes of data, and it's very exciting. But before we jump into this episode, and I do want to share the background of it and how it came about, I want to also ask you both how you're going. You're not allowed to mention sport, but you are allowed to share a little market update. Before we get into today's episode, take a listen to our weekly market update.
For those people interested in Adelaide, the market has certainly come off the ball. I went to an open inspection on the weekend. There was a fair few people there, not as many as there were, say, a month or two ago. And unlike the last 2 years, where people, there would be offers coming in either straight after the open inspection or the first couple of days, there are still no offers come in for this particular property. I mean, I know it's only one property, but also all the stats show that even though Adelaide property prices are increasing, they're not increasing at the same rate as they were a month ago, a year ago. So we're just joining the rest of the pack in this slowdown. Very interesting. We're recording on Tuesday, the 26th of July. The new CPI figures come out this week.
Yeah, and that's going to be big tomorrow. Yeah.
Right. And that's going to have a big impact on how high interest rates go next month.
Yeah, what a wait and see. I've got a little market update. I saw a really interesting article on the weekend, and its headline was a bit of a shock, you know, clickbait kind of thing, but it said our Victorian rental reforms were a failure. And then they'd interviewed some people, a couple of which I very highly respect, and they had some really good insights. And so I did what you sometimes do when you spot an exciting article, you pop it on social and it just started this run of commentary. Oh my goodness. And it was really interesting. A couple of people said, oh no, you don't know what you're talking about and it doesn't make a difference and landlords should be responsible. And I don't disagree. I think every tenant is entitled to a safe property that is, you know, warm and completely livable. But I think the reforms and the way that they've gone about it and the timing, and also, obviously, it's in sync with when we've just had a really hard credit squeeze and we've been losing investors, particularly in the southern states where, you know, we had rental eviction moratoriums impacting us. It's getting really tough. And what was really interesting, though, was a lot of agents started commenting and saying, no, this isn't rubbish. This is true. It's real. We're getting a lot of landlords making a decision to sell. So in certain cities, we're seeing a lot of our pool of rental properties is eroding for various reasons, but one of which is potentially when the rental reforms are just too onerous and too tough. And as a rental provider myself, I really do shake my head at some of them. And the requirement to have regular testing and reporting and tradies delivering you something that's, you know, a $400 electrical compliance report. Well, if they're doing the right thing, that's great. But if they're doing the wrong thing and bolting on all kinds of additional charges, which I've seen happening, it's making it tough.
I've certainly seen on social media, that's gone nuts, the changes in the rules in Victoria.
Very
certainly hearing the jungle drums beating around that more and more, it just seems to be filtering into more media. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out with the rental squeeze.
Sure.
I don't know if it's happening in where you are, but in South Australia, people are getting their council rate notices. And, you know, we've all been loving having our property price increase, but not when you get your council rate notice.
No.
And now your property's worth more, so your rates are gone up.
Yeah, that's the valuation we don't want.
Particularly when it comes in just before potentially a bit of a downturn too. So you know, you're paying peak rates. My market update is just to continue to prosecute this argument that I think the neutral cash rate is probably around 2 to 2.5 and just my concern that we're going too hard too fast. And I appreciate the RBA has a narrow path to walk because they need to bring down inflation, which is a concern, but not at the expense of household wealth and jobs and, you know, really crushing inflation to back under 2 to 3%. So I just thought I'd go through a few key data points. So today's cash rate, 1.35, probably about to jump to 1.85. That's above its June 2019 level, which was 9 months prior to the pandemic. So above where it was at 9 months prior to the pandemic. So it's now almost double the pre-pandemic level.
That is if we have a 0.5% rise next week.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Westpac recently disclosed that 29% of all its borrowers are at least 1 year ahead of their required repayments. That's great, but what it isn't necessarily talked about is a staggering 50% are less than 1 month ahead. That's half of every borrower. So we've already had a 5% plunge in Sydney prices from the recent peak, and that's just in a few months. Melbourne's not too far behind. We know how property flows through to the household wealth effect, and over one third of variable rate borrowers have already been making average monthly loan repayments, including irregular payments to redraw and offset accounts. But 40% of all borrowers aren't, and they'll face a massive increase in monthly mortgage repayments exceeding 30 to 40%.
I've got a question for you, Dave.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, you know, Westpac are counting the people that are less than a month ahead of their repayments. Are they privy to offset account usage, and do we know what proportion of homeowners are effectively using offset? Because that's quite different to filling up your loan account with redraw.
Look, the RBA is starting to talk about people, how much they have in their offset. So I believe they are privy and factoring in. So I'd say when they factor in redraw to say how far you are ahead of your repayments, and they are considering offset. Part of it is, you know, there'll be a lot of investment borrowers who aren't 1 month ahead because they're just making interest-only repayments and they're focusing on paying. So that can distort those numbers.
Yeah.
But I just think, you know, if they have to start reducing rates very quickly after rising rates, you know, that's a sign they've overcorrected.
We've seen it before. Pete's sitting there nodding.
History repeats itself. Yeah.
A wise old owl, he's just nodding.
So I just think we just need to keep being, you know, just don't raise too rapidly. Let's see the outcome, the change in the data. Consumer confidence, as low as it's been, and we know that's what ultimately drives economic outcomes. So, again, I just think we need to be careful with how rapidly we're raising rates.
Totally. So on that note.
Right, off that high horse.
Yeah. I'll maintain it though. Vote one, David Johnson. We love hearing from our listeners and we'd love to tackle more of your questions. So please, if you have any on your mind, no matter how great or small, send us a message. You can email us info@propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor or go to our website, Facebook page, or simply click on the link in your podcast app under the play button and fill out our online form. Let's talk about what you guys have prepared for our listeners today. And we've touched on it, we've talked about doing it, you've actually done it. From Pete the other day at a reasonable hour, I have attached some research I've done on capital cities versus regions using the ABS data. The data for all capital cities and regions started in September 2003. The ABS latest data is up to March 2022. So what Pete did was cut two sets of data, 2003 to March 2020. So we've got a nice long run of 17 years worth of data, not including COVID. And then we got the 19-year cut, including COVID. So what this comparison is doing is benchmarking the differential that COVID caused, what we'd call a long-range set of data. And it's really intriguing. And then, Dave, to supplement this, you and Anne-Marie got into looking at the major regions in each state and what's influenced them. And you've looked beyond just the growth data and you've actually gone into, you know, some really interesting geographical features and some demography so that we can get a bit of an idea about what are the common themes that have really impacted the regional markets that have outperformed and what's COVID had to do with it and which ones would have been flying with or without COVID. So without further ado, Pete, I'm going to ask you to open with just breaking down how you ran these data sets in a bit more of a detailed way than my 2-second overview.
We've talked a lot about capital cities versus regional centres, where should people invest. So what I thought I'd do is compare the two. Originally, I was just going to compare the two. And then I wanted to compare the two, but based on what was it like before COVID and what was it like after COVID? Because we've talked a lot, as many people have talked a lot about the exodus from capital cities to regional areas. So I just wanted to test that theory. So if we look at each of the cities and states in order, in Sydney, regional New South Wales, they increased the same amount from 2003 to March 2020. So each one of them 98%. So they almost doubled in value in that period of time. However, if you include the 2 years of COVID, regional New South Wales performed much better. So regional New South Wales, so going back again from 2003, 224% to Sydney, 159%. So that's a significant change. So if you break it down, what was the increase during COVID in regional New South Wales? 63% in 2 years. In Melbourne, Victoria, Melbourne was the better performer pre-COVID, but after COVID, regional Victoria zoomed ahead. So regional Victoria finished growing from 2003 to 2022, 264%. Melbourne, pretty close by at 215%. So during COVID, regional Victoria increased at 64% in a two-year time frame. That's pretty big.
It was pretty big, but it was so emotive at the time. You know, it was tears. It was people feeling the absolute brunt of lockdown and just doing anything they can to just get out. And, you know, I had a staff member leave. It was just not working for them. And kids were struggling. It was a time that, you know, I'd sooner forget, but it's marked us all, but particularly those in cities that were in lockdown for months on end with limited ability to see when we'd get out. You know, we were all getting online at 11 o'clock listening to the Premier's address and hoping to interpret some kind of little promise that the end is nigh, but it was a long time.
Yeah, it was certainly a severe lockdown in Melbourne. Brisbane and Queensland, regional Queensland was better performer before COVID, but when you include the 2 years of COVID, Brisbane was the better performer. Adelaide was the better performer than regional South Australia in both periods. Regional Western Australia was the better performer during both periods. But the big news is Hobart and Tasmania. So Hobart was the better performer during both periods, but Hobart was the best performing location. It increased 220% pre-COVID, 356% including COVID. That's the big headline news.
Isn't that more of a renaissance of a city? Hobart's done some amazing things, but it's had such a renaissance, you know, as far as an artistic, foodie, holiday destination city. COVID absolutely amplified that. But for Hobart to outperform in its own right over that 17-year period, that's colossal, Pete.
And that is phenomenal.
I know, as an investor increase there. It was more rapid towards the end. It didn't have a big upswing. I mean, we talked about the data. Hobart really jetted along after 2003, but it did nothing for quite a long time.
And just two more, Darwin and Northern Territory. Darwin was the better performer during both periods, pre-COVID and including COVID. Canberra house prices increased 100%, so just a little bit more than Sydney, from 2003 to 2020. And then Canberra house prices increased 196% when you include the 2 years of COVID. So some phenomenal price increases, especially as a result of COVID, with regional New South Wales and regional Victoria benefiting the most due to COVID.
And when we look at the areas that were not so horrendously impacted by lockdown, were they impacted by COVID or were they impacted by super low interest rates?
Yeah, good point. Super low interest rates affected the whole country.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think you're right. Melbourne in particular, because it had the most severe lockdown. We've seen over the last 2 years, Melbourne property prices during COVID increased by 27%, right? But in regional Victoria, increased by 64%. So a huge difference there. So Melbourne was the worst performing major capital cities. Anecdotally, I think it was the severe lockdown in Melbourne which helped create such a huge property price increase in regional Victoria.
And Sydney had the second most severe lockdowns as well.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's sort of that opposite reaction, the most populous condensed cities.
And we can't forget Canberra. I think that's remarkable for Canberra to have 100% growth pre-COVID and then 196% growth post-COVID. Now, Canberra was impacted by lockdowns as well, and they had uncertainty and a fair amount of upset to their economy. So it's a surprise.
Well, it wasn't too badly impacted, though, having had family there, and we managed to escape two of Melbourne's lockdowns very fortunately and live on the coastline up near Coffs Harbour, and we went through Canberra on those trips, and because they managed to keep their numbers really low, and so they did have some lockdowns but not many at all, and really their only long one was that first one, which the whole country had. So they, a bit like Adelaide, quite fortunate to live somewhat normally through that entire period.
Yeah, there was that little last lockdown, and they couldn't trade. I was chatting to a couple of BAs up there, and they were limited from accessing properties as well, whereas Sydney could still do one-on-ones. I don't remember, we all had a bit of a moan about that. But, yeah, you're right, it wasn't a super
between
long extended.
Between those two bookends,
Yeah.
I would strongly encourage our listeners, if you're interested in this, to check out our show notes, because unlike most of the ABS data, which is indices, this is actually dollars. So you'll see how much property is worth in each capital city and regional area. So we're talking about Canberra. So in Canberra in September 2003, the median price was $360,000. In 2020, it was $720,000, exactly double, right? In March 2022, it was $1,065,000, which is triple what it was back in 2003. So, yeah, have a look. I think it's pretty interesting. And it really tells the story of COVID, of people escaping, in particular our major metropolises, to regional areas.
I just got to ask you, Dave, when you disappeared up the coast, how'd you go with the Melbourne licence plates?
Well, I must admit the first one when Melbourne was having that, we were very lucky to escape Melbourne's 100-plus day second lockdown, and it was such a blessing, but you felt guilty driving around with a Victorian licence plate.
More like a target.
You tried to minimise. And, some people would take a second glance at the number plates and think you're potentially breaking the law, but thankfully.
You escaped just before everything was locked down. My kids did that as well when they wanted to come back home. Mm. They heard that the borders were going to shut. If they couldn't get a flight, they drove over the border.
Yeah, we had missed a holiday and just needed to get away for a holiday. Went up there, caught up with family at Avoca Beach, and then the numbers just felt like we were making the great escape, actually, because the numbers started rising as we were leaving, crossing the border, and then they just kept going up with those press conferences, and it was pretty depressing. And then we had a big decision to make to, live at my parents' house for what turned out to be a couple months.
Yeah, awesome.
So, it was great.
On the coast, and one of the things that I imagine would have made it attractive to you and the family, Dave, was the fact that you were on the coast.
It was magnificent. Melbourne winter, which we're living through at the moment, 5 days a week of rain and 13 degrees. You get a fully sunny day, you beauty. Let's soak this up. That's like an average temperature of 20 degrees, which is one of the markers actually that I've measured the top performing SA3 locations of each state on is climate, among others. But yeah, look, it was great to live through that winter. If you could just transplant that climate to Melbourne, hands down, you'd have the best city in the world, which we already do, but
Well, with climate change, it might be that way in about 100 years. So Queensland weather's coming down to you. You don't need to go up to Queensland.
Pete, we've got so much data here, and Dave's just sort of overlaid a couple of his comments about some of the physical characteristics that can provide a city with becoming a really attractive city. Before I switch over to that and start talking about some of those attributes, what are some of the other highlights that you picked out?
Yeah, so there were some amazing results in this, like regional New South Wales. So if we put all the capital cities and all the regional areas together, there are 15, because here it doesn't include the regional area of the ACT because it's so small, all right? So pre-COVID, New South Wales regional was second to last, but including COVID, it was fourth from the top. Like, that is a huge, huge difference. But the top four did not change. Pre-COVID and including COVID, Hobart and regional Tasmania, Melbourne and regional Victoria were the top four performers pre-COVID and the top four performers when you include COVID, or top five performers when you include COVID. So just some, phenomenal results. I mean, this is all, lovely, but, people don't really invest in a regional area. They invest in a particular town, don't they?
Yeah.
Or particular, yeah. So I'm really keen to hear Dave's stuff on, is it the light? Maybe it's, bigger towns, smaller towns, towns on the coast, towns not on the coast that do better than others. But that's just the overall picture, how capital cities perform to regional centres. But, yeah, really keen to hear Dave's research.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about, on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
Dave, why don't you lead us through that? Because, you've talked about the appeal of an area. I can certainly talk to the investor appeal of an area, but that's quite different. And I think the critical thing with Pete's homework that he's prepared for our listeners is that we're talking about capital growth. Mm. What we're not talking about is all of the annualised returns inclusive of rent, because we know that regions often deliver much higher rental yields, and we haven't talked about that because that's not what this is about. But an investor would target a regional area potentially for a very different reason than what an owner-occ would target a regional area for. So, enter Dave, you're going to talk about some of the magic that these areas hold and how we can spot it.
Yeah, look, for a long time, I grew up in my childhood in a regional area. I've got a lot of family who live on farms or coastal regions. I think the most relaxing place in the world is the ocean, so I've spent a lot of time along the coastline of Australia. And I've thought for a long time, what drives these outperformance? And as I've spent more time with family in different holiday locations, but where they live, and farming locations, and also the South Island of New Zealand, where Sarah, my wife's from, I've really tried to think about what and notice what are the locations that have outperformed and what drives that, what makes them special. And so I've got some theories around that. Yeah, so I said to Emery, let's look at the top regional location of each state and see what, if there's any common characteristics that have driven this outperformance. We looked at, rather than towns, because there's so many towns and there's so many cities that you can track your Byron Bays and you can track your, these types of, but let's look at regions and see if what we can find. So the SA3 region, so this is something the ABS does, statistical area levels, the geographical areas built from whole statistical areas levels. So basically, they're like a cluster of towns. Often there's one major regional city within them. The locals would consider they all sort of live in this sort of segment of their regional state. So it's to create a standard framework for analysis of ABS data at the regional level through clustering groups of what are SA2s, which is probably like towns, ultimately. So SA3 levels aggregate up into a higher level of, which is SA4s. In the major cities, SA3s represent the area serviced by major transport and commercial hub, but we're looking at regional locations. So in the outer regional remote areas, SA3s represent areas which are widely recognised as having a distinct identity, as I just touched on, and similar social and economic characteristics. So one of the things I wanted to measure each of these locations against, and then we'll run through the top performers of each state. Yeah, let's see. They're probably going to have some proximity to a major capital city. Let's see. Do they have a proximity to a beach? Let's see what the average climate is. Let's have a look at the population. Let's look at the median age versus the median age of the state. Median income. I think often there's a correlation between older towns or suburbs and greater capital growth and more desirability in the location. So let's look at that. Let's look at the quality of the local nature and the industry. If we start with New South Wales, the highest performer was the Lower Hunter region. That's a regional area just near Newcastle. So its median value is $642,000 and it's grown by 34.47% in the last 12 months. If we look through at some of the characteristics of the Lower Hunter region, it certainly aligns with a lot of what I thought would cause regions to outperform. So, you know, it's 50 minutes drive to Newcastle, part of it. So it's close proximity to Newcastle, which is a major capital city of regional New South Wales. It's got a great climate, about the same distance. So it's a reasonable drive to the beach. It's got a great climate, sort of 20 degrees is the average during winter. Its median age is in line with New South Wales. Its average median income is higher than the average for New South Wales. It's an early established region, 1830, it was established. So I think there's often a link there between, you know, the early Australians went to these locations for similar reasons to why we would go to them today. They always had some natural beauty, and often there was agriculture that you could farm off the land, make money, create industry, and create wealth. So, you know, it's got some of the oldest winery regions. It's got beautiful farms. The Port of Newcastle is the largest coal export port in the world. You know, it's got a RAF base. It's got a World Heritage Wilderness area. It ticks a lot of the boxes. What do you both think about the Lower Hunter?
It's gorgeous. What was intriguing, though, is just how far away from the capital city some of these regions are and just the degree of performance that we've seen. And I know that Newcastle is a city in its own right, and we've always got to ask ourselves with large regional cities, you know, proximity to a capital city is irrelevant if the large regional city offers absolutely everything. And it usually comes down to critical healthcare, so like specialist healthcare. If you can get good specialist healthcare and you're not having to regularly make trips into the capital city, then you're in a city that is absolutely self-sufficient. And I think that there's a lot to be said for that. And, you know, when we even talk to or listen to Bernard Salt when he talks about his philosophy on how the regions are growing in size and they're being bolstered up and we've got decentralized services and good health services, etc. That's the whole intent of this, to start having secondary cities that don't require us having links to the capitals. And this is a really good case in point. But I'm always, you know, secretly excited for the Victorian regions when I see just how vibrant the New South Wales regions have been performing, considering their distance from Sydney versus our region's distance from Melbourne. I think there's a lot to be said when you've got a good regional centre that's less than an hour and a half's drive. You know, that's a really exciting point.
What I find interesting, Dave, which goes against what I thought would happen, is the Lower Hunter, which was the top performer in New South Wales, is nowhere near the coast.
Yeah, it's not right on the coast. I think a lot of people would still consider it's not that far of a drive from the coast.
Oh, okay.
Who head there?
See, 50 you know. Minutes. See, in South Australia, 50 minutes to the beach, mate, you wouldn't go to the beach. You'd build a pool.
Yeah.
I think the beautiful agricultural and, you know, wineries and I think wealthy farmland around there is a big driver. of the outperformance.
What about rivers and lakes? You've talked about that before, absolutely. Pete, when you have a hierarchy of the things that people want to be near to. If it's not the city and it's not the coast, it's the mountains, it's the rivers, it's lakes.
It is, yeah. Lakes. So rivers, lakes, and then artificial lakes. Yeah, for sure.
So I think the dining, the artisan foods, farm fresh produce. If you're a serious surfer and you want to be surfing, you know, most days of the week, you probably wouldn't necessarily be living there. I think that's an interesting point too, Kate, that you've made about being further away from the capital city than we might expect. And the Victorian outperform SA3 is the same, isn't it? So it's Colac and Corangamite, which is about an hour 50 from Melbourne. So it's west for people who don't know the area. I've got two brother-in-laws who own farms down that way around Campbelltown and Cobden. It's not far from the Great Ocean Road and Lawn. It's wealthy farmland around there. You've got Warrnambool.
It's interesting you say that, Dave. All of the stats are right. We've got property in a little place called Gellibrand, which is inland. It's between Colac and Lawn. And it's a dog of a drive to get to the coast. I usually get pretty ill because I don't like being car sick and windy roads. But it's beautiful forest, you know. The Otways are in this catchment. And what's really interesting is the price points were really low. And so they have experienced that price hike because a lot of people during COVID said, well, if I can get something to run away to is, you know, as long as it's within 2 hours or within 3 hours, whereas prior to COVID, people would say, I don't really want to travel more than 90 minutes. Yeah. So we've seen people's preparedness to travel further. Mm. And we've seen some of those places that have come off a really low base outperform because of affordability as well.
100%. So the median there is 559. It's grown at a bit over 29% in the last 12 months. If you're looking for some of, you know, whether it's schooling or health facilities and what have you, you know, you've got Warrnambool, you've got Geelong, and probably the further you get away from a capital city, you probably get secondary regional cities who create greater self-reliance because they know it's too far to travel to the major city. And so they probably put in place better infrastructure over a long period of time. This was proclaimed as a shire in the 1864. So again, you know, it's been around for a long time, a lot of those towns. A lot of those towns are really beautiful little towns as you drive through them. So, yeah, look, it's not that dissimilar. I mean, obviously there's plenty of things that are different, but in terms of sort of its relativity to Sydney, it's not that dissimilar to Melbourne as the Hunter region, really. So if we maybe jump down to your neck of the woods, Pete. So the top performer was the Limestone Coast in regional South Australia, 30%. Again, a very low base, so its median's only 341,000. So that'll be part of what's driven people there. But do you want to talk about the Limestone Coast and what are some of its key attributes?
Yeah, so we just happened to be there last week in Robe and Beachport. As we were talking before we started recording, Dave, the Limestone Coast is not only popular with South Australians, but it's also popular with Victorians because it's really just over the border. And so I actually wrote an article for a magazine for those people in South Australia. It's called SA Life, and I looked at gentrification, and I talked about Robe. Normally you talk about gentrification of suburbs, but just because I used to live there when I first started teaching, I've seen the change over 40 years. Mm. But I can go 25 kilometres inland to a town called Millicent and it's like I was there 40 years ago, like nothing has changed. Mm. So certainly gentrification has helped with Robe and to a lesser extent Beachport, but it's also the holiday makers and the wealthy holiday makers. I mean, you know, people with them, like I don't know what it's like in Victoria because you also have the River Murray. I don't know if you have holiday shacks along there, but in South Australia, our generally people will have holiday shacks on the river or you'll have beach places.
Yeah.
And generally the wealthier people go to the beach places, hence why property prices are higher there than they are along our river. So all it's three areas that you've picked, Dave, they're all on the coast. The York Peninsula, the Fleurieu Peninsula, including Kangaroo Island, and the Limestone Coast, which is, very interesting indeed. The other bonus is the winery. So, I mean, most people, when they think of South Australia and wine, it's generally the Barossa Valley, McLaren Vale. Coonawarra is an excellent wine district. Yeah. The Limestone Coast is a lesser-known wine area, and also Padtaway is not far away from Coonawarra. So it's certainly got a lot of things going for it. The wealthier families in the area will send their kids to private schools and often in or boarding school in Hamilton,
yeah,
just over the border in Victoria.
Yeah.
So it's where the money goes. That's where, yeah, property prices are going up, I think. It's where the big money goes.
Yeah, yeah, there's a saying, money grows where money goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very true. And interestingly, this is where Robe and Beachport are our two major crayfish ports. So there's, yeah, a lot of money that can be made from crayfish, and hence you would have people that live off the sea that could generate potentially a higher income than people that live off, say, the land in northern South Australia where there's hardly any rain and you might have to have thousands of acres to make a living, whereas people in the southeast either can make a very good living from one boat or just hundreds of acres of land.
100%. And we were talking beforehand as well, off air, I've got family in and around Dunkeld, which is next to Hamilton. They travel to Robe and have for, you know, decades with the family for their Christmas getaway holidays. Then you were mentioning the boarding school in Hamilton is where a lot of people from Robe actually send their kids. And so this cross connection of, you know, some of the wealthier regional locations between Victoria and South Australia occur, and not surprisingly, they're in these top performing areas over the last 12 months. And
but the one thing I don't understand is, because you and I, Dave, we both like the coast, the water is freezing in Robe. Mate, you need a wetsuit to get even in the summertime.
Yeah, but it's still warmer than Victorian waters, so.
Oh, dear.
I feel like they're going on a real holiday because they're going to another state.
going north, that's right.
Yeah. No sponsorship deal with Victorian Travel Authority.
Yeah, like it's the same with my brother-in-law. You know, they've got a younger family like us, and now they've started travelling to Robe. I mean, you know, they're 30, 40 minutes from the Great Ocean Road, you know, and the beach is there, but they go to Robe. So it's obviously a bit of a destination location. So if we move to regional Queensland, the top performer was the Gold Coast hinterland. Yeah.
Filled with Victorians.
Yeah.
Or Mexicans, as they call them, because they come south of the border.
Oh. Yeah. I remember years ago when we had those number plate slogans, you know, you get your new number plate. We used to be the education state and then the garden state. Yeah, and then we had some bright spark came up with Victoria on the move, and it was actually coincided with when our population numbers were decreasing and people were going into other states. It was just the craziest thought. But, yes.
It's true.
Yeah, well, it kind of illustrates what happened for a lot of people during COVID, and I know a lot of our sales down here were people moving to Queensland.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Gold Coast hinterland grew by 33%. It's one location, unlike some of the others, where the median's actually quite high. So it's above $1 million. So it's obviously a wealthy area to live. It's sort of inland a bit from the Gold Coast. It can have some nice views up in the hills, in the hinterland there. But it's still only 20 minutes drive to Surface Paradise, and it's a bit closer to Brisbane as well. So only an hour to Brisbane. So it can be a location for people who are working in Brisbane, but want to have that lifestyle of along the coastline.
I'm glad that you did a Gympie there, because what I was going to do was compare what I would consider lifestyle towns to non-lifestyle towns in each state. And I was going to compare, say, Noosa Heads with Gympie, which is inland. I mean, it's several kilometres away, but even if you go inland of Noosa, it's beautiful hinterland. People still go there for the lifestyle. But they generally don't go to lifestyle for Gympie. It's generally for work or retirement.
Gympie, just to Pete's point there, in Queensland, grew by 30%. So not far away, because we've got here the top three or four highest growth areas over the last 12 months in our data here.
Interesting one. I mean, we could talk for many hours on this because we have so much data that we haven't even started to unfold. But sadly, we've pretty much hit the rev limiter for our episode timeline. And before I turn to gold nugget time, just want to check in with both of you. Are there any other little tidbits that we should be sharing with our listeners?
I'll just share quickly for our Western Australian listeners. Manji Mup was the top performer of 17%, which was 5% above second place. So it's down towards the Bunbury region, which I've spent some time. Beautiful old port town down that used to be do a lot of whaling back in the day. Period homes all throughout that sort of region. And it's been the top performing region in WA. So
Northern Territory probably don't need to talk about because it was regionally, the whole area was probably the worst performer in, yeah, in Australia. In Tasmania, southeast coast, see, you're on the coast there. Central Highlands, obviously not near the coast, but, I mean, you wouldn't be too far from the coast anywhere in Tasmania, would you, either the east coast or the west coast. But some great performances there. I notice you got the average climate here in the wintertime is 4 to 13 degrees. That certainly wouldn't be attracting me to go and live there. But median age is quite high. I remember when Kate and I did did some research on Portsea and Sorrento, the median age was significantly higher than it was for Melbourne. And here we got median age in this area is almost 57 compared to the median age in 42. So to me it shows retirees, but possibly also quite wealthy retirees.
Yeah, and we've got people that, you know, are down there not necessarily only having one property, you know, people choosing to live in their Tasmania holiday house because, as we know, there's a lot of opportunity to Airbnb and privately rent down there. The rental market's got really tight. So on that note, guys, we've covered a lot, but before we say cheerio, I want you to pop on your thinking caps and we'll share some gold nuggets.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
So we've talked a lot about what's happened in particular during COVID, but COVID was only 2 years. And if you're investing in property, you really need to have a much longer time frame than 2 years. Dave says short term is 10 years, medium term is 20 years, and long term is 30 years. So I would strongly encourage you, if you're looking at data, don't just look at what's happened, who was the best performer last year, or who was the best performer during COVID. Go back and have a look at not only who were the better performers, but try and work out why were they better performers. Was it gentrification? Maybe was it the move from the city to the country? Was it because a university's gone in there and more people are moving there? Or some industry has now started up there? Yes, you know, the quantitative analysis is lovely. That's all the numbers. But you also need to do some qualitative research. And some of that means you're going to have to travel to the area and check out what the drivers could be.
Great point, Pete. Dave, your gold nugget.
If you're going to invest in a regional location, I think, you know, still do the same level of research as you would if you're buying in a capital city. A lot of the same fundamentals that drive out performance in capital city suburbs are the same factors that drive out performance in regional locations. But ultimately, do your research, try to remain impartial, understand the numbers, understand the demographics, understand the history, but as Pete said, also understand the lifestyle livability factors that cause people to want to go to that location, because there's a lot of commonalities between outperforming regional locations as there is with outperforming suburbs in capital cities.
Well, on that note, guys, I thoroughly enjoyed all of your data. And we hope our listeners have too. We look forward to an action-packed episode next week.
Hi there, it's Anne-Marie from Property Planning Australia here. If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about some of the topics discussed, take a listen to episodes number 14, How to Choose a Location for Investment, What to Look For and What to Avoid. Episode 52, Dissecting 10 Years of CoreLogic Data, Capital Cities and Regional Centres. Episode 89, Capital Growth, What Increases Property Value? Episode 150, Migration Trends, The Outlook for Population Growth, Will Melbourne Recover from Population Losses? Interstate and Intrastate Trends, which regions face aging population risks and high job vacancies, the future for international and internal migration, and episode 163, predictions for 2022 revisited, which predictions are on track, where we went wrong, revised expectations and forecasts, and half-yearly report on capital cities, regional locations, the top performers, and what do we expect in the back half of the year.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bacos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, Chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.